be apprehensive before I'm doing certain things. And that's what saved me, because I'm thinking, actually, you know, should I hit him there or should I hit him there? Or should, if I hit him there, he might get knocked out, he might not wake up, or do you get what I mean? So I had to kind of, but now with the kids, they're just like, if I stab him,
yeah,
if he dies, he dies. He will then, you know, take their dad's Rolex and go and wear it and go college in, like, I don't know, Warsaw or something. And then you've got inner city kids who'll be like, this, we've seen on Snap, this kid is showing his Rolex on Snap. And they're like, yeah, we're going to get that. That's worth like 30 grand. So it was a case where you could have about 10 mans in a gang and one person tries it with you. And we just got the balls to not back down. So it's like that, then that gang member knows, okay, so you're about it yourself. And yeah. I've always been undiagnosed ADHD. And it kicked in when I went into the school and, you know, they needed support. And I felt like I was at home because I could understand. Do you get what I mean? And it, ultimately, even though I was a teaching assistant, I could be myself. So I could mess around and do stupid things. And the kids would be like, say, you're crazy. A lot of people probably don't sit with that. But if I want to go to sleep at night and have no bad conscience on my head, I need to do the right thing. Do you get what I mean? It doesn't work for a lot of people, so, but it works for me. So, but I will speak on it. I will speak on it. I mean, most people, you've known me as Mentor Malachi. And then, you know, when I'm doing talks and with professionals and in professional spaces, Malachi Nunes. So I'm a behavior mentor. And yeah, I've been doing it since for quite a long time now, but officially with like my CIC, Ambitious Lives, which was founded in 2022. Before that, I was working like in the community in 2011, from 2011, working in the community, working with, you know, people from ages, you know, 10 all the way up to like 30, just bringing people together. So that was my main thing that I started. And then started to work in the prisons. So then I started to see where the struggle was, the change of generation, you know, like the young people, like the numbers are high. Like, why is everyone going to jail now? How come they're young? And then started to transition onto doing the mentoring. So doing that in the prisons. And then I started to work in a school. And it was a school for like kids with autism, ADHD. And I've always been undiagnosed ADHD. And it kicked in when I went into the school and, you know, they needed support. And I felt like I was at home because I could understand. Do you get what I mean? And it, ultimately, even though I was a teaching assistant, I could be myself. So I could mess around and do stupid things. And the kids would be like, say, you're crazy. Like, what's wrong with you? Do you get what I mean? I'm like, I've got ADHD just like you, mate.
How many people do you think our age went to school in the 80s and 90s and that weren't diagnosed ADHD? It was always the naughty kids early or
yeah,
one listener just get shunted out of class.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, I like with this, because I know right now you've got like, I see on social media, like people always looking at videos and am I ADHD? Am I autistic? This, that and the other. And then you've got a skyrocketing amount of diagnosis, you know. And I think each person will understand that it's a challenging lifestyle rather than a label. So that's why I've never really, only up until now, I've never really cared about the label, because I've gone through that challenge already. So when it comes to, you know, it's something that you live with, something that's struggling, like basic stuff that people do, it's a struggle for me to just, I have to think about things before I do them. Just basic stuff, do you get what I mean?
Yeah.
And then think about remembering things because there's so much going on in my head, so much thoughts. You have to kind of like, I don't know, put them, file them in boxes in your brain and say, okay, let's access that one, let's access that one. And that's, and then that becomes normal to me. I may take 10 minutes longer than the average person to do something, but I get it done. And then because I've doing it at a pace where I'm concentrating, I do like a super job. And that's where the superpower comes in, when you got, you know, like you start to be, a lot of people with ADHD are creatives, like creatives above the average, thinking of these crazy ideas, and you're thinking, wow, how did you think of that? It's just one of those little superpowers. Yeah.
Whereas when you were younger, did you struggle with that and think, I don't know what it is? Now you seem like you've, because of that, you've seen how to deal with that. I suppose when you're younger, you just like, you're confused, aren't you? And just.
Yeah, I mean, mine was more about, so I was labeled hyperactive. So that's all it was, hyperactive. One of the things where I look back and I always say, when I was in school and was in lesson, when it was time to clear up, and all the stuff was on the floor, crayons and pencils. So I think the teacher said to clear up time now. And we was on like, it wasn't a ground floor, but it was kind of high, the windows. So me being impulsive, and that's the key word, impulsive, having impulsive behaviours, I decided, okay, I'm not cleaning up. I want to have a laugh. So I jumped out the window. Sounds a bit mad. I jumped out the window. And I ran at the back of the school, jumped over the gate, and I ran all the way around to the front and came back in the school. So to me, yeah, it's like,
it's all over again.
I just wanted to, I don't know, like, I can't tell you why I done it, but I just know the trigger was tidy up, and it was just a mess. And I was like, overwhelming, like, I ain't tidying up that. There's just pencil sharpener things all over the floor. I can't. So I just wanted to entertain. And I didn't see the risk. And that's how I lived my life for a lot of the time, for my teenage life and early 20s. And even now, it's still, but now I kind of process the risk first. And I learned that from socializing in and doing work in jobs, professional jobs and security jobs. So I kind of like training my brain to process, because my impulsive thoughts will be, just do it. And that's what,
think about it on the first second.
Yeah, and that's what I teach the young people now. Give yourself that couple of seconds just to think, because if you don't think about things before you do it, you just do it and you can get, oh, what did I do? Do you get what I mean?
Mm, yeah.
Yeah, so it's kind of like, that is, yeah, crazy challenging experience, to be honest.
You talk about growing up, and I've seen in your videos a lot, we discuss it, growing up in that Johnson Crew, Burger Bar era of gang love. What was that love for you as a young man?
So for me, it was just growing up and my friends live in the area. Just my friends, we grew up and family connected. So, you know, back then it was like the Caribbeans in certain areas, and then everyone grew up as communities. And my parents are Rastafarian, so there was a unity. So we just grew up with kids in the area all together. And then it was through like poverty-driven circumstances, areas, you know, getting used to people, communities, living in the country, like the domino effect, it did affect the young people at that time, 80s and 90s.
Yeah.
And so I was around a lot of stuff growing up, seeing a lot of stuff, and always remembering, I don't want to follow that pathway. Like, I always had that in the back of my brain. And I don't want to follow that pathway. I seen the money. I seen the jewelry, the cars, all of that stuff, the high life. But I thought, okay, there's, I admired the business aspect of doing something yourself, getting the money to do it, and then making something of it, opening a business. I always looked at that. And then, you know, but it was a case of the whole gang thing. I would say it develops from you just being a group of friends, and you get up to no good, and then the law class you as a gang, or then you live in a certain area, then a postcode class you as a gang. So where I lived, I grew up, and it was just friendships, and then they was repping a gang. I'm like, I'm not in no gang. Like, I've never been in a gang. That's, I always say that, because sometimes I, you know, get to speak to people and they're like, okay, so, you know, ex-gang member. I says, I'm not ex-gang member. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah.
I just know who I need to know.
Was it hard to stay out of that though?
Yeah.
A lot of pressures, and if you don't, then you're not, you know, you see.
So lucky for me, so that story is very, like, for me, it wasn't a pressure thing, because I've got my brothers, my uncles, and they, no one in my family's been in a gang, but we all have this thing where we look after ourselves and we can handle ourselves. So it was a case where we could have about 10 mans in a gang, and one person tries it with you, and we just got the balls to not back down. So it's like that, then that gang member knows, okay, so you're about it yourself, but you're not with us, but okay, we'll leave you. Let's go and mess with the actual oppositions, the gangs. So I was always like in between. I think it got to a point where I grew up with more people like association affiliated with like Handsworth and Ladywood. So it was that case where they were my friends. So I knew what they were doing and what they're repping and what they're aware of. But and even then, some of the lads up there, I had beef with them, because it was funny, because I knew a certain family that I grew up with from babies community. But then there was other lads who live in the area of Handsworth. I'm not from Handsworth. So when I'm around them, some other young ones would be like, who's that? And I'm like, you don't need to know me. Like, I'm cool. Like, but then opportunities. So how it's different to today's, back in the day, they'd be like, okay, try and rob you in front of the people that you know, and see if the Kindle really push it. Do you know what I mean? Like, oh, do you smoke? And you say, oh, yeah. Then that's the opening to say, oh, do you want to buy something? And then, you know, you got money, and they'll take your money. And then you'll be like, what? I thought you was my friend. You get confused. That's how you get pulled into being a person that knows them, being around them. And then you end up having a fuss with someone in your own area. Do you get what I mean?
There's a guy that does TikTok video, but humorous ones are like, and that, yeah. I've seen an exact scenario.
Yeah.
He goes out with his pal and he sees someone that he knows and ends up robbing him. He's like, and his pal runs off, but he's like done the humorous one.
Yeah. And it's still the same. And it's like, you'll be going football or something like that, and there'd be one kid. And again, it's poverty. So it's like there's one kid that, looking back now, had like trauma in his life, single parent household, things were going on, no money. But then my mom like will buy me gold. So I used to wear my chains and my rings, and I always see people looking like, let me try that chain on. So I'm like, oh, here we go. And you have to defend yourself. Do you get what I mean? And I think for me, again, I think the only times me being in the wrong place the wrong time. So I'm affiliated with certain people. So when other gangs see me with that person,
that's it, you're automatically labelled.
Automatic labelled, but they're not saying nothing at the time.
Mm.
But when I'm just minding my own business, going to the shop or going anywhere, I've had, you know, back in the day, people pull up in a car and say, you know, what's your name? And I'm like, tell them a name, and they're like, oh, you know such and such. And I'm like, oh, here we go. I says, yeah, dude. Oh, so you with them lot? You with them lot? And then get out of the car, and you got like five men get out of the car with weapons. Some with not, some with weapons. And back then it wasn't a knife thing.
Mm.
So back then it was like, if you have a knife and you stab someone, you're weak. Do you know what I mean? It's like a bit of scrap. And you only pull out those things if the person's got something. So, or you're in a gang and you're known to carry a gun, so the other person has to, do you know what I mean? So the knifing wasn't an issue.
When did that swing happen then, like, culturally? Like, say, back in the day, it was, if you picked up a weapon, now it's no one fights, everyone's carrying weapons, aren't they?
I mean, back in the day, I would say that everyone had to learn how to fight, because, you know, I think there was more martial arts as well. A lot of people, I would say.
Flash on the other way,
like. Yeah. So a lot of, you know, a lot of our generation have done some sort of kickboxing, some sort of karate, things like that. And, you know, just learning to fight. So when you were young, it was just a fighting thing and you learned to defend yourself. I think the knife thing kind of transitioned when the young people grew up and they didn't have to fight. So They weren't strong because they couldn't fight, but they were angry. So what do you do if you can't fight, even if you're an adult, a fully grown male, and you're not a fighting person, but you're angry and someone's violating you? You're going to pick up something.
Whatever's nearest.
Yeah, to defend yourself. Mm. And I think, and then what the influence is, the role models in the music, which we'll get onto that, but the role models in the music, then the young people, they don't have role models in their home. They have role models in music. Music's influential.
Of course, yeah.
So then they're like, okay, if he's carrying that, I'm carrying that.
It's a fashion thing.
Yeah, and then what happens is the domino effect. You're hearing that, okay, my friends have been stabbed, or people have been stabbed in the area. How can I defend myself against being stabbed? Carry a knife. Do you get what I mean? So it was, that was the kind of transition. The generations, yeah, definitely changed. Definitely changed.
Yeah, Ginge from Sean, and one of his quotes yeah. stood with me is that people are scared to get black eyes these days, you know what I mean? And
yeah.
It's something that that real adolescence show I said that I was watching yesterday, the cop said something like, he could have just been a black eye or a cut lip. Instead, a 12-year-old's been jipped in the neck.
Yeah.
Where's the balance between, okay, come on, straighten that, and it just being okay? Because I assume, and then it's probably, you probably know more than I do, these mm-hmm. kids that carry the knives,
mm-hmm.
who then get involved in a scuffle and end up stabbing someone, probably don't even mean to do it half the time. It's just that they've got it there, something happens, and it's, well, if it was taken out of the situation, it wouldn't be there. It's just, it blows my mind.
I think, so when I work with the young people and what they, I go off things like when they tell me, you know, how would they feel. So I've had young people say, it's kill or be killed. I'm not going to, like, no young person wakes up and want to die or want to kill someone.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not going to wait to be killed. And it's kind of, I always say, people need to reflect on the adult mentality and the child's mentality. It's not far different. Any adult that knows you're going to work and there's people carrying knives, you want to go home back to your family. You don't want to, but you have to go there because it's work. You got to think about, whether you do or not, you're going to think about, how can I defend myself? Whether I'm fighting them or have a weapon or something in the car. Adults do that. But because young people, this is their first rodeo, they don't know any different. They're just going with the worst case option, where we would think, okay, I've got different options. I can tell someone, I can safeguard myself. Do you know what I mean? With them, it's like, you either, we're not snitching, we're not telling police, we're either dealing with the situation or not. And the way that they don't want to deal with it is they're classed as, you know, weak. No one's going to really... Actually, when they show that the weak, they'll have more people that get onto them.
Yeah.
Do you get what I mean? So, like, it's embarrassing.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, so I always say, being a good kid needs to be cool again. Yeah. Do you get what I mean? Because we have, and I think what happened is, culturally, I call it a youth culture. It's not even, back in the day, it was a community thing where you would have different gangs with different races in different areas, whether it's inner city. We've got gangs in Liverpool, different, you know, white, we've got mixed race, we've got black, we've got Asians. But now it's everyone on a whole, every young person is just, it's a youth culture. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah.
You could, you know, there's kids, and then I think why the government and that they're doing so much to do with it. I mean, you've got kids, I'm sure the MPs got grandkids that have listened to drill, or there's something gone on behind, you know, wealthy homes, and it's influenced them, and they're thinking, what is going on? Like, where's this influence? And they're like, yeah, I wear balaclavas now. Do you get what I mean? You know that kid is a good kid, money, wealth, stability, but he's walking in with a balaclava on and gloves, and you're like,
it's okay. Back in the day, when he went, okay, kid old and adult one, right? And he was all like, the parties were always as all the rich white kids out.
Yeah.
The
parties were.
But that's when WI, I was even trying to do all that, and that was a cultural thing, wasn't it? The police and all that, mm-hmm. trying to shove all that down. Mm-hmm. It seems like it's going in circles, hasn't it?
Yeah, and I think all young people are affected now.
Yeah.
And then what we're looking at, which, like he said, with adolescents, we're looking at what happens at home. That's where things are starting. So now it's transitioned. Poverty was the driver for the gangs. Now it's more, it's still poverty, but it's to be accepted status, to feel cool, to look cool. Because you've got, you know, kids, rich kids with money and families with money, who will then, you know, take their dad's Rolex and go and wear it and go college in, like, I don't know, Warsaw or something. And then you've got inner city kids who'll be like, this, we've seen on Snap, this kid is showing his Rolex on Snap. And they're like, yeah, we're going to get that. That's worth like 30 grand. And it just, what is social media, again, a lot of the kids are seeing these things or messaging or seeing things on social media and say, okay, let's go. And let's go, so, you know, deal with that and get involved.
As a mental then, social media, as if I said, point,
how do you even begin to, like, how to talk to the kids about social media and how to use it properly and how not to use it? How do you do that as an adult to these kids?
I tell them that the police are watching and, like, I make them aware. So with a lot of the young people, they don't think, because they're born with the social media element, they don't think about the risk. But I tell them straight, I say, you know, like, there's been situations where they've had an argument in their WhatsApp group, and from the argument, someone's been stabbed. In reality, I say that what's happened is the police have confiscated phones, looked in the groups, seen who was in there, seen who was egging it on, see who was instigating, and they get pulled up. And then charges can be used for that information. That's documented. Do you get what I mean? And then everybody gets a charge. Everybody's in trouble. Joint enterprises and things like that. Like, you may not be the person, perpetrator, but you never done anything to stop it. So you are involved, and according to the law and how things are, you will get time. Anything like that. Do you get what I mean? I mean, there was a situation, so some kid put it online in London, where he picked up, he was in Westfields and he picked up a chair and threw it off the balcony, and it missed someone, just about missed someone. I always use those things as examples for the youth, because they don't know these things. I said, the person who threw it, you know, is going to jail. The person, his friend who was standing there, is going to get a charge. And the cameraman is going to get a charge. Everyone is going to get a charge. So if you're the cameraman and you're filming your friend do something stupid like that and you got sense, you need to stop him, because you'll be like, mate, listen, think about yourself, think about your career, your family. I don't want your stupid actions to make my life go upside down. Do you get what I mean? Because, and that's how I just kind of remind them, like, don't think that things...
Don't do nothing, do something.
Yeah, just use your brains, use common sense. Do you get what I mean? There's cameras everywhere. There's more cameras than ever before. And when I work in some of the colleges, some of the young people, they're like smoking in the lifts and they get caught. Then I'm mentoring them, trying to keep them in college. And I'll sit there and I ask them, I say, like, didn't you see the camera in the corner? They're like, yeah. So I'm like, what? You seen it? He's like, yeah, but I thought you did at work. I says, oh my days. And it's just that, what
you
that,
know, that good set is
bullshit. It's like,
come on, man.
Like, the camera don't work. I says, what camera doesn't work? So it's about common sense, logic. And they're missing that because there's too much going on. They're overwhelmed. Social media, family stuff, looking good, money. There's so much things that they need to kind of meet an expectation. Common sense, it's not common.
Do you think that the youngsters need to be older now because of social media? Do you know what I mean? 10, 11-year-olds now, if they're seeing social media and they're saying about the pressures they've got, me looking good, this, that, and the other.
Yeah.
Do you think that they're trying to be older than they are? Because of the pressure of social media.
Yeah, so the 7-year-old now has a mentality of a 12-year-old. Because times have changed and what they're doing, they're mirroring things that they see on telly. They're mirroring their peers, their role models. So when I ask I've asked the 15-year-old, how do you feel? How old do you feel? And he's saying, I'm 15, I know I'm 15, but I feel about 19. So he's going to do 19-year-old things. when it comes to like rationalizing, he's doing it at a 15-year-old's mindset, and it doesn't make sense. So there's a struggle, there's a disconnect, and I just bridge that gap using certain tools, using things, lots of different things. I just bridge that gap so they can, you know, kind of rewire the way that they're doing what they're doing. Yeah.
So it's like they haven't got their wings yet, so they don't know how to deal with certain situations or how to look at that.
Yeah, they don't. They don't. They definitely don't. 100%. You'd almost think to yourself, like, and any person with a teenager right now, any parent can agree. Sometimes kids malfunction. I call it malfunctioning. You ask them something and there's like a delay in response or thought process. And you're like, hello, just spoke. And they're like, oh, yeah, yeah. And you're like, what is that? That is an overwhelming brain or just shutting off because they're trying to process what you're saying and process loads of different things. Do you get what I mean? Like,
it's male. There was a scientific study kind of saying that at no point in the evolution of human beings has there ever been so much information pushed and processed into children at any given time. It's unprecedented. So social medias, the internet, the information that they get is overloaded, that is literally what's happening to the brains.
Yeah, it is. And it's overloading and it's causing them to, like, putting yourself in a young person's shoes. If my parents getting onto me for my bedroom not being clean and whatnot, but I've woke up and I've seen a WhatsApp group, have a boy threatening me, I'm not even hearing what my parents saying. My room, the last of my worries. I don't care about my room. I don't care if you're moaning. So they can just stand there, not listening, and you're just thinking about how you're going to deal with that now when you go to school. Who, what, where, what are you going to do? How are you going to defend yourself? And that's where the parents need to realise with the young people, there's a lot going on. So kind of find out more about your child. Do you get what I mean?
I always thought you'd do that. How do you do it?
It's really a social media ban for under 16s.
It'd be good to do that because then they set a rule so the young people know this is the rule, the laws of the land, it's just there. It's not your parents. But I think when answer to your questions, how do you do that is it starts from when the kids are young. It's about building a bond because a lot of parents, and this is a lot of parents, forget to build the bond between the ages of 2 years old to like 9. And then when the teenagers, what's wrong with you? How can we not this? How can we not that? But then when you look back, there's been a lot of stuff going on. That 5-year-old kid has witnessed domestic violence, witnessed neglect, witnessed a lot of safeguarding. There've been, you know, child protection. And then the parents will be like, what's happened? I don't know what's happened to you. It's like, can we look back and see what kind of life that the child's had? Because it will impact them. And I know you can't help those things. So if those things have happened, you need to then build that bond, put protection around the child from then. And even simple things like when parents, I don't know, talk to your child. And when a child, you know, shuts you off, keep talking to your child. Like a lot of parents will give up too easy. He doesn't want to talk to me, so I don't talk to him. Nah, keep pressure. Like, are you not the adult of the house? Do you got me? You pay the bills. Do you get me?
I find that a lot in your work. That's a lot of where the situation's kind of beginning.
Yeah, when I look deeper into it, because I never just meet a young person and blame the young person. Because a young person, you know, can't get a job. You're in school. You don't really know much about life, have no experience of life. So how can I blame you for your actions? You must have seen something, been influenced by someone, led down the wrong path, had a bad experience for you to be so angry. It doesn't make any sense. Like one of the young boys that I worked with in the school, he used to come to school angry, punching the walls in the morning. This is like 8 o'clock in the morning. I'm like, how are you so angry at 8 o'clock in the morning? Like, I need to understand. So he didn't know how to articulate it. So he used to always come in and he'll, instead of going listen, he'd eat some toast. So I was thinking, like, he always has to eat his toast. So then when I spoke to him, it was like, he doesn't eat breakfast in the morning because there is no breakfast at home. There's no toast. There's no cereal.
He's literally starving.
He's starving in the morning because his mum will just costs him to get up for school, get to school. She hasn't bothered to, because then at home there's like traumas and mum's going through stuff, whether it's mental health, whether it's addiction. But then the child is coming to school angry, and that's all it is, because he was hungry. And then again, that associates with adults. If you go to work every day, if we go to work every day, we're not eating breakfast. And, you know, the manager's...
Hungry in my office. Yeah. Hungry.
The manager's getting on to us. We're going to be a bit off key, like, and the manager's going to be like, mate, disciplinary. You can't keep coming in this morning acting like a twat. Did you get what I mean? And this is the same with kids, but it's just different. Same process is the same. So that's why I look at things in the same.
So it's like, oh, yeah, sorry, mate. I was...
Yeah, you can articulate.
We're all right. I was looking in a traffic jam and some of the kids are just like,
I don't know. I don't know what's happening.
Exactly.
Oh, toasting, but all right, but he doesn't see that.
Or you could go shop.
Mm.
Or, you know, you had a couple of days where you realise, you know what, I'm actually hungry. Then you kind of change the narrative. The kids are just like, you know what, I'm just going to go to school and drink them Red Bull drinks. Because that's what they do, drink in the morning. First thing, I've seen them necking back at Red Bull coming into school. Yes, ready to rumble now. And I'm like, what? Do you get what I mean?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's there's loads of experiences that encompass everything that I'm doing. There's a lot of help that can be there, but then you've got that disconnect with parents and schools and authorities. So if you come from a family that don't like schools and teachers, then they're going to be at home, oh, that teacher's an idiot, school's an idiot. Your school, this, that, and the other, and then, you know, it's all right. You don't need to listen to them.
That's the difference. I remember when you were younger.
Yeah.
If your parents went to the school, you were getting.
Yeah, of course.
If you get in trouble at school, you get a good idea when you get home.
Yeah, and I guess removing hitting your kids, I think it's 90% is beneficial to remove that right to hit your kids, because people are exploiting it, and, you know, bruising your kids and being super angry, unnecessary. Like, I come from a community where the Caribbeans, it was normal. Do you get what I mean? Growing up, I thought that was normal. And it was like, I used to live a couple of doors down to an Irish family, and they got the same.
Yeah, the slipper from 10 yards.
Yeah, and then...
But, we were from an Irish background, so it was like, yeah.
But then when I went to school, and it was a school, and culturally, I seen the difference. Got white Irish and white English, and they were like, my mum hit me with a shoe, and I'm like, yeah, don't you get that?
Yeah, like what kind of shoe? What kind of shoe?
Are you looking? You know what I mean?
You got the rubber, or you on the
yeah, like,
or you on the plastic?
Yeah, like, and they were baffled. So then I started to think, when I was younger, I was like, okay, this is not normal then. And then as I got older, I realised it's just a tradition, it's cultural. It's, do you get what I mean? And it's like, crazy, but yeah, you need definitely to remove that, because, you know, even though you can't put your hands on your kids now, we still have people murdering their kids. So I do think it's right to be in place, but I think there needs to be a fine line where you can discipline the kids without hitting them. You got to use your verbal conversations and know what to say. And I mean, yeah, some situations where the kids are just being unruly, and kids, they switch off, they confiscate their PlayStations. And then kid gets it back and he's naughty again. You gotta do those things. And I always say to parents, don't give up, because you're not winning the battle. Those little battles, you're not supposed to win them. You're winning the war with them. Do you get what I mean? The bigger picture. Switch off the internet if you have to. Keep that consistency. And trust me, the child will get used to it. I think, do you know what? Actually, I'm not going to push it, because my mum, she will switch off the...
We've got a big gallon of cod coming up on Fridays. I mean, oh, I don't want to...
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Did you ever get the soap in mouth as well? That language.
I think my discipline was more from my ADHD making me do some crazy stuff. Do you get what I mean? Like, why would you do that? Like, if we're talking about... Just crazy things in school, and like being with friends, and just say like there's you're with your friends, whatever gangs that people want to call them, and then you see the other gang, and it'd be like, you've got the key individuals who are all mouth, then you've got the key ones who will do something. when if I, I've been in situations with the role models, the bad role models, and they've says, you know what, to the younger ones, yeah, get this, get that, and let's go and do that. And I know how that feels to be the young one and thinking, I can do that. Of course, I'm game for that, looking at everyone else and they're a bit scared. I'm like, now I'm going to show him that I'm that guy. Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
And then I go and do something stupid. And looking back, I'm thinking, yeah, that could have cost someone's life. It could have cost me my life, but like some silly stuff. And I'm thinking, I'm glad that I was just guided and I just didn't get into that situation. And I think when I look at it, I'm trying to, you know, pick it apart. And I think in my head, I would be apprehensive before I'm doing certain things. And that's what saved me, because I'm thinking, actually, you know, should I hit him there or should I hit him there? Or should, if I hit him there, he might get knocked out. He might not wake up. Or do you get what I mean? So I had to kind of, but now with the kids, they're just like, if I stab him,
yeah,
if he dies, he dies. Do you get what I mean? Literally.
That's how a lot of it starts. Is it literally like bravado, fair pressure, and just that silly little thing, sort of trying to impress one of the older in the group? And that's how these things generally snowball, and then all of a sudden it's like the that Glue story, wasn't it? The film.
Yeah.
It was 8 years ago, and that shut Star City down for the premiere because it all kicked out there.
Yeah.
But it's literally all just like you said earlier, you're in an area with your pal, but his pal. In that area, saying who's that, and then that starts a fight, and then it snowballs from there. All of a sudden, we've got a war between two sets of lads.
Yeah, definitely. And I think everyone grows older, even the lifers, the young boys who were in jail, like some of the young boys who were like, yeah, they do little crimes. I go youth prison, it's calm. TikTok shows that, you know, you're making food in your kettle, you're playing PlayStation, yeah. But I said, okay, cool. So when you do a crime and you shank someone, which is one of the most things that kids doing, you're going to get minimum 5 years attempted murder. You're like 16, 17. They're going to give you more than 5 years. Do the calculations. Adult prison starts 19, 20. You know, because you can still stay in the juvenile prison, 18, kind of. But 19, 20, 21, going up, you're in the big man prison. And I says, so you're going to transition from that cool youth prison, what you think, to a big man prison. You're going to have the shock of your life. Screws run prisons in jails. And when you want something and you're kicking off and the screw decides not to even open your cell, that's you done for the day. And they're like, really? I'm like, these are the things that you don't know. So when you sit down with wise men who have been to jail, who have been in, had that experience or know about these things, they're the conversations that young people need to have. But the oldest who have that information, they're either still on the road, in jail, or then you got a lot of them coming out and trying to give back to the youth, which is good. But there's not enough.
Yeah.
And then you've got ones who, some of the young kids would say that they're washed up. You know, you're in your 40s. You're just washed up. That's your time. And they're not listening. And some of those ones where it's like, it's hard to save. Because I've had experience. Trust me, some kids, it's really hard to save them.
That's, yeah. What I'm saying, off a really stupid question. But does it weigh heavy on you sometimes when the kids are like, we have to carry a knife, Malachi?
Mm.
We have to carry a knife. And yours ones are like, don't carry a knife. And they're going, if I don't carry a knife, I'm done. And I imagine that could be a conversation that you could have.
Mm-hmm.
How do you approach that then, knowing that he's got to go down to wherever an area, he lives there and he's hanging around with the wrong people, and if someone pulls him, then they're going to have that they're going to have a knife?
Mm-hmm.
Does that sound like a stupid question?
No, because I always think that the knife amnesties as well.
Yeah.
Because you see, they get hundreds of knives handed in. But then the other kid, there are a group of kids, they go, oh, so nobody did that, is it?
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? Because everyone doesn't just go and let's all come together and come by art.
Yeah,
I always thought that mentality of the kids that are willing to go and hand the knives in, where that leaves them then. So now you haven't got that knife.
So I think there's two things I'm going to address. How it started was a domino effect. One carried a knife, other got scared, he carried a knife, other got scared, and that's the domino effect. The only way to reverse this whole thing is to do the domino effect backwards. Stop him from carrying the knife, stop him carrying the knife. Now, regarding the risk, it's all circumstantial. So when I speak to some of the kids, they're like, I understand that, you know, after school, I'm going to an area, my road, there's gang members, you know, they tried to rob me before. How do I defend myself? I say you have to think of different options. So, for instance, I knew when I was younger, catching a bus that got me straight through to Newtown. There's a shopping centre, and if you're not from the area and the Newtown lads jump on the bus, it's a wrap. But there was a time, a certain time in that they would jump on the bus. Or if I wanted to get to Walsall, wanted to get to Sutton, there's a different bus. I know it took a bit longer, but it's about, why not catch that bus to avoid it? So what I say to young people is, if you know there's gangs in the area and they're chilling somewhere and you're coming from school, you can understand that they're not going to be chilling there forever for the whole day. So even if you, and this is where kids don't talk to their parents, talk to the school. If there's a situation like that and you're being groomed or things like that, avoid it. Option, take a different route to your house. You got a long road, your house is there. Go the other route, get in, tell your parents, come and pick you up at the bus stop. Going home with your parents. Just got to plan these things. And it sounds a lot.
It's hard for them.
It sounds a lot, but I'd rather do that than stay alive. I'd rather do that than walk past these gang members, they pressure me, and then say, come on, a hot car pulls up, jump in a car, or I shank you up, you jump in a car, and they take you to Brighton or Milton Keynes and leave you there, county lines. I'm telling you, I'd rather plan. Do you get what I mean? 100%. And then on the flip side of that, family safeguarding the area. So if you know that's going on with your son, yes, say it, tell who you need to tell. You know,
do the police need to be more involved? There's a lot of this community work. Is there enough done to involve parents, to be able to educate parents and teachers and schools and whatever on this kind of scenario?
I think we're like 5 years too late. So it's starting, but it's already embedded so much when they neglected the families, neglected the youth clubs, they shut it all down. I think 2006 was round about when they pulled all the money. And that left a whole 10 years. 2016 came. Oh, let's decide on putting some money back. You've left 10 years of community. So, and that 10 years is when you do the maths, you look at the age groups and why the age group of kids, all the kids are going to jail. They were young in that time. They were supposed to go, but they didn't go. And then you've got the kids, COVID.
Yeah.
All those kids there. You know, they're like, they were like 15, 16, 17, and they were neglecting now. They're 18, 19, 20, 21 max in jail. One of the oldest on the road, they got neglected. They had nothing to do. They were going for a madness, you know, it was affecting everyone. So, yeah, COVID did make the figures go higher. So, answering your question is, it's all about, first of all, making them aware of how to deal with gang situations and friends, relationships. Then it's about being aware on how to plan to avoid those people, avoid those situations. And then it's about building self-confidence, because you need to be, for me, I've been, you know, we were talking about the gangs back in the day. I mean, I've been around some serious people, and they haven't intentionally tried to bully me, but it's very subtle the way, because if you know how it runs, you know that it's not just a direct bullying, it's very subtle. Like, it would be a case of can you drive, because I'm on a ban, this is your friend, and then you're driving, but then this friend comes back the next day, oh, here's the keys, gives you the keys, nice car, and then you become the driver. But that person already knows, yeah, I'm going to use my man to drive me around. But you think he's being cool, letting you drive his car because you're helping him out. It's subtle. You're being bullied. Do you get what I mean? And in those situations, I had to separate myself and do like certain shops or areas. No, I didn't go. I didn't go back because I thought, you know what? You man a day. I'm not interested in that pressure because you act as my friend, but you're not. And then you're going to bring me, you know, you're going to try and bully me. And I would just use my common sense in those situations. Do you get what I mean? So it's a case of, with young people, they need to be taught these things. But who's teaching them?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a mentor. I can count how much mentors have in Birmingham.
Yeah, because I've seen you got quite strong opinions about having you on mentors,
yeah,
legitimate mentors. Is it an issue in mentoring that there's people involved that aren't necessarily that have experience, or they're not in a position to mentor effectively?
So I've always been outspoken, and I speak about these things because I just speak the truth. And that's what the youth respect as well. So being a mentor, the youth respect real mentors, like not just doing it for the money, not just doing it because, like, the young people know, yeah, you can start up a business. They don't know what it is. We know it's a CIC. Get funding. Take them to Orton Towers. Everyone gets paid. A lot of people are adults. There's always the abusers of the system. They're abusing that. But the young people have come to me loads of times and says, when I've like done a project and I'm like, okay, we're going Domino's, food or whatever, they're like, you know what? Like, I thought you're just going to give us like a packet of crisps or something like that. And I'm like, what do you mean? It's like, yeah, because when we're doing the other project and that, sometimes we didn't even get, we got a bottle of water. And I'm like, okay.
And you know that I've had the funding.
Of course, because in funding, and these are big brand names, like people are doing it for years, cutting corners, but the youth are clocking. So what happens is they say to me, you know what? They see the realness and then they see the fakeness, and either don't go back to them or they tell me, they say, yeah, that company's done that, or that he done that, or this and that. And I'm just hearing the stories and I hear it from their mouth. There's no lying. The reason why they're not lying, because they don't even know that it's a wrong thing that they're telling me. So they're trying to get clarity. That's when you know it's not a lie. And then, yeah, I don't associate myself with those people. I leave them to do what they're doing because I'm focusing on what I'm doing. But I just speak on it and say, people, be aware. Yeah, we do have, there's a lot of good mentors in Birmingham, but there is also, as with everything, some people who are trying to get a lot of the young people, get money, tick box, statistics, and then a week later, that young person tries to call them and say, oh, can you help with this? They're not answering their phone. I can't get in touch with them.
Yeah.
Oh, we're not doing that project no more. We're not doing that project no more. They don't even think to refer them to people like myself or who else has got open projects. So the good mentors in Birmingham, we have a tight circle where we're like, okay, I can't deal with the young person. Can you? Yeah. Can you keep it that, like that?
Especially, yeah, you all kind of circle out and speak to each other and network with each other to say, okay, we've got this going on.
Yeah.
The only way you're suitable for this, or
yeah, yeah,
someone who's more in your field and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
It sounds like, though, that it should be just a stick on for funding, just moving on slightly. It feels like it should just be a thing to get funding for, but I know we've spoke about it before, how hard it is to get funding, and from hearing stories about people who get funding and doing that, does that then affect people like yourself that just trying to get it?
In the start, there was just gatekeepers for me, you know what I'm saying? And then Craig Pinkney, I've known him for many years. He's like, I'd say one of the best, biggest mentors, longevity-wise, in my generation. He studied the academic side of youth violence and stuff. So he wasn't the gatekeeper. And he spoke to me and says, look, you're credible to do this work. And I've just, you know, anything I've asked him, he's gave me an answer straight. And even when it's dealing with the professionals, because there's gatekeepers in, professional environments, corporate environments, and he opens doors. So when they see me walking, they're like, okay, cool. You know, as long as you can articulate yourself and, you know, you got a story, then they're willing to listen. And Craig's already paved that way, you know, that communication, that barrier with the corporates. And so funding, I got refused of funding from the Police Crime Commissioner the other month. Do you get what I mean? I had it the year before. And I mean, it's only, I think it's only like 5K, but it does a lot. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah.
And I used it before to do and deliver bleed kit training. This year, their agenda changed. I can see that there's issues within schools. So that's why the other day I was on LBC with one of the journalists, and he was reporting on how the statistics are higher in school of kids carrying knives. But I've knew that for the past 2 years, and that's why I've been working in school. So I'm like, okay, Police Crime Commissioner Fund is to reduce the violence, help the young people. So I'm applying to allow me to deliver workshops in schools. So their agenda's changed and said, you know what, that's an education thing. They've got, leave that to the education part of money. Apply for that. I'm like, what? So you've got the Police Commissioner funding, you've got beef with the education funding.
Yes. But you mentioned schools are right out of the
pop. Yeah, it's like, oh, so now I have to be careful what I say.
Yeah.
Do you get what I mean? It's like,
word it differently.
Yeah, it's like, but the, so that's the politics of the world. And I've had to learn that. So I've had more funders saying no than say yes. But I'm not chasing the money. So that's why, do you get what I mean? I'm not bothered. One of my biggest funders is the National Lottery. And, you know, I produce the reports. I produce the figures. I produce the results. You've seen on our social medias, voices, images, anything from the young people is all there. So they can never say, is it work impactful? Yeah, it is. You can ask them. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah, it's there. It's there. Quite funny.
But I get it. Some of the funders, they're a bit skeptical because there is, a lot of people applying for funding, setting it up. You know, there was a big, big company. I'm not going to mention no name, but a big company that it just was grinding on me, like, had no experience with the young people. But they got a business that does something for young people. And to make money, you need young people. So how do you get young people in?
That's the reason using the kids as pawns.
Yeah, and applying for, and because they've got a big business and, you know, academic on that level, they've applied for big money, got this big money, then sending emails out to all of us grassroots and say, bring your young people, bring your young people. And we still have to pay to use their services.
So getting double bubble.
Mate,
what?
I was like, you are.
That's why you take what you do as a passion and you it clashes edge with business, doesn't it?
Yeah, of course.
It's a horrible... Georgie Moses was saying the same thing, weren't you? That in COVID, a big cancer charity got a load of money and then what they were getting, nothing. How power they are. His company all of a sudden wound up, disappeared.
Mm.
But they had all the money.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas she's like, any chance?
Yeah, and I mean, that's what I'm saying. So anything that I do with funding, everything's, you know, documented. I make sure everything above board. There's a lot of people who are, you know, messing around with money and things like that. I stay away.
Yeah.
So when you see Ambitious Lives, you rarely see associated with some other grassroots or some other businesses. You rarely see that. Malachi now, I will mix with, you know, my brand. I don't want my brand to be tarnished by the wrongdoings of other people. Do you get what I mean? But at the moment, I say it's going good. I've recently stepped into the sports area. So every year I put on a game, football, with the youth collection, a collection of youth from Birmingham to V different cities. So one of the cities we've done 3 years running now. First year was Nottingham. Second year was Derby. And then we're doing a rematch this year. So we rematched Derby yesterday and we won. Yes. So they came down either in August or probably next year. I want to bring the youths out of town now because they've come down to Birmingham.
Public season, good prospects as well.
Absolutely amazing. Like, and I think the aim was, because I would have a young person, needs mentoring, high risk. I say, you play football? He's like, yeah, I'm a baller. But he's on the road. So I'm like, come training. I've got a project that's just specifically for training, funded by Sport England. And those young boys from those backgrounds come to football. And I'm amazed. I'm like, what? And you smoke as well. So I'm like, you know what? I've got some games going on. Come to the game. And then they play together and they love it. They absolutely love it. They're like, I've never been around so much good players before, who don't come from the walks of life like me. Do you know what I mean? I just played football in, you know, the five-a-side and just with my mates. So it brings them together, unites them. And out-of-town lads have never been to Birmingham. They've had the chance to come here. And so that yearly thing that I do this year, like, even that, it's not all about the money. So I self-fund certain projects myself. So, because I'm even trying to move away from, it's not about relying on funding, because what happens in 5-10 years? What's sustainability? Yeah. Do you get what I mean? Because before funding, I'm a businessman. Yeah. So, you know, before I've got all this funding, I've got my own publishing business. But
yeah, I was publishing. How did you get this publishing?
Having dyslexia and ADHD, reading was never my thing. I'm a visual person, films, I need to be taught visually. But I created my own magazine called Ambitious Magazine, and it was to highlight the young creatives in Birmingham, and I'd go and do journalism with them and you know, get their story from nothing to something, like Wood Ridge says, and then I'd put it in the magazine. A lot of the people who were doing good stuff now, you know, I caught them in the early days, and then I created a magazine, designed it, learned myself how to make. And then I had magazines, and then I thought, you know what? I enjoy this. So I went to university in London and done book publishing course and got a degree in book publishing. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to open my own book publishing company. And I've done that. And then I started to publish books for other people, publish a few books for myself. So that's the first business. And then I thought, yeah, let's transition it. So even now, some of the projects, I get some of the young people to publish their own books, and we've got loads of projects coming as well.
Free.
Yeah,
that's awesome. So you talked earlier about the journalist coming round with you. I've seen a couple of videos, and you've been on Score News a couple of times.
Well, yeah.
How'd you find that? Are you naturally a camera facing person? That's something that's a.
Do you know what it is?
A role is that?
I grew up with a stutter, so I would never be able to. I'd say. Maybe 10, 15 years ago, I'd say I would never be able to sit here and talk so fluently with how I'm talking. Because the nerves will kick in, I'll be stuttering. So I used to avoid doing telesale jobs. Like, there's a lot of struggles that people don't realise. I avoided doing certain jobs. That's why I found security so fitting. A lot of jobs, I'd work in McDonald's from school. They were like, do you want to go on till? No. Why? I'm not going to tell them, but I don't want to go on till. Why? Because I have to talk to people. And, you know, a person who wants his Big Mac is not waiting 10 years to hear me stutter, and it's all long. So put me in the back. Let me make the burgers. But it was definitely, so being on the TV now, it came natural. It was a process. You can't just jump on the TV. Some people do courses to get media trained.
Yeah.
I've always had a lot to say, but I needed to articulate in the right way. And even being around, touching on going back to being around the man's on the road and stuff, you lose that academic voice. So there was a time where I was, you know, chilling with my friends and stuff. This is like just early 20s. And my vocabulary was just really crap. I'd say under 5 words just to communicate. It was really, or 10 words. And it was like, what is going on? So I had to go back to college, start doing assignments and get back into the kick of that. So when you speak to young people in the light, or even young people in general, not even just on the road, just generally in the light, you ask them a question like, I don't know. It's crazy. I understand. I'm like, you know what? You need education because you need to get back into that. So me being on, you know, Sky News, I kind of manifested it. I was like, do you know what? I need my message to come across a bit more. So in the whole year, I think Midlands Today was the first one. A guy called James, he is a good friend of mine who I met. He's trusted in. And I think I only work with journalists who trust in the mission. Not like just use them for the young people, the story, and then they get, you know, their accolades. No, they trust in it. Millions Today, then you, ITV, Channel 4, Sky News. And I've been in international page, Germany. Where else? Yeah, there was a quite, the Italian journalist came over, looking at the difference between their knife crime and stuff. So I've had a lot of exposure in the media.
I think what's quite endearing about it is you can get a point that get across that point,
mm-hmm.
and you've got lived experience as well. Mm-hmm. There's a fine balance, but there's probably guys who you speak to who've mm-hmm. got lived experience as well. They just wouldn't be able to.
Yeah,
start doing it for your front of it all. Yeah, do you know what I mean?
And I think that's my super ADHD power. So I've always been able to. So the same way I had a stammer as a younger, I taught myself. I kind of cured it myself. And I thought to myself, you know, if I can do that, then I must can do a lot of stuff. So that's why I call it a superpower. But for real, like, yeah, I train myself to do certain things. And then, I mean, with my stomach, definitely still comes out. I still struggle with it. But definitely. And it's a case of, it's like a music artist. When they're singing or when they're performing, they're in their element.
Yeah.
Off stage, they're just back to the normal self. So when I'm speaking to people about the passionate things I love, it just flows. Do you get what I mean? So if on a normal day, if I'm talking, even when I'm talking to my family and that, the stutter comes out, but they're used to it. Or when I'm going to JD today, I went to JD today and it came out, it just happens. But if I'm talking about things I'm passionate about and the youth,
mm-hmm.
it just happens to just flow, to be honest. But yeah, that being the media, it's I just want a message to get put across, do you get what I mean?
Well, you're starting to put the message across really, really well. So what's next? What I know you've got a bigger picture in it.
Yeah, what's next for me is collaboration. Just growing in what I'm doing, working with people, different companies. Recently, this year, after working with LeBron, which is a great marketing, great, you know, Hidden Heroes thing was great. Things like that. I've just been, aside from doing my projects, yeah, and the mural, it was mad. It was, that was overwhelming. That was for me, you know, me just having my needs. It's just overwhelming. I just couldn't even comprehend it.
You're a unique Hall of Fame above with yours now, and it's Ozzy Osbourne's
isn't it? Yeah, so, I mean, even that, I made sure it wasn't something that I was like, me. I was like, young people, you can...
It never came across,
baby. Yeah, but this is the thing, because that was just... I was like, hold on, how can I make the young people look at that and be impacted by it?
Yeah.
And they was like, yeah, we've seen it, you know what? So you can, like... You can get your face on the wall. I was like, you can do that, you know. You can do that.
After that, so that
yeah, definitely. Possible. Yeah, definitely.
You find that hard if you were talking earlier, weren't you, off camera about awards.
Mm-hmm.
And are you not actively pushing awards this year for awards?
Mm-hmm.
How hard do you find, is that like a balancing act as well, where people want to give you genuine recognition of what you're doing?
Mm-hmm.
Then you're like, well, hang on, how does this work for the kids? And how do you put that across mm-hmm. into the kids?
So... I appreciate that the awards is there because it recognises creatives in Birmingham and other cities. But one of the things, you know, I've got an award for the work that I do. One of the things is, again, there's two sides to it. I'll have an award and that for the work I do. And, you know, even my mum was saying, you know, you appreciate, people want to appreciate you. So, you know, take it. So I says, okay, cool. But at the same time, I've had an award, got an award on the stage. You've been awarded anti-knife crime. And I've got a Snapchat and someone said a kid's been stabbed down the road. So I'm trying to balance the two, like, do I feel good about this or do I, what? Do you get what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it still happens. So I'm kind of split between, you know, like, the kids are still dying. So... Like, it's not...
There wouldn't be as many if you wasn't doing or...
Yeah.
What you are doing.
There wouldn't be as many, but I can't...
You can stop... Yeah.
That would draw you insane, that boy.
You can't stop it, but I mean, how am I supposed to feel...
Yeah.
on top of the world because I've won an award, when this, one of the youth that I've been mentoring gone to jail for life. Like, I don't know, you know, I can only look at it as appreciation that the people are saying, we appreciate what you're doing, and it, then it's there. But then going, having awards every year, what, to the stock up, you say a football match, like you can say you got a trophy, like you're a well decorated ground. Like, I don't need that because the problem still is there. So I need to do the work. And I think that being said, I just think that I'll just step away from that, same way like I've stepped away from repeating myself on the TV. Do you get what I mean? I'll go to, if you like, I've gone from the lower media channels to Sky News to LBC and whatever goes higher to get the message across. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's a case of, the awards, I'll just step back from that. And I don't know, again, people like to exploit the business model.
Well, this is
it makes a lot of money.
Yeah.
And I'm realizing, so I'm like, you know what?
You don't want to end up fucking yourself.
I don't want to be
cooking on a string type thing for someone then.
I mean, people just sometimes use me to bring people to their award show.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh God, here we go.
Yeah.
Can't people just keep things humane?
Do you get what I mean? That's the thing, is it? The cynical side of businesses, there's always a commercial opportunity, isn't there?
Yeah, and I don't work well with that. I mean, if it's a business, like my book, if it's a business, it's a business, but I'm a CIC for the community. The money that gets put in, comes in, stays in, and helps people. A lot of people probably don't sit with that, but if I want to go to sleep at night and have no bad conscience on my head, I need to do the right thing. Do you get what I mean? It doesn't work for a lot of people, so, but it works for me. So, but I will speak on it. I will speak on it though. But you're saying what's next?
Yeah.
Ambitious Lives International, different, you know, because all the youth are affected in different countries as well. So it's a case of me expanding and kind of being that mentor, studying more about it, getting to understand it. Being more of an advocate, representing, reaching more kids, just kind of doing the same work and doing partnerships with, you know, more councils, expanding my team as well, because it's just me at the moment.
That's the difficult part, isn't it? To scale. You can't do it all yourself. And like I say, it's wise on you then. The things are still happening, but you can't do it all yourself.
Do you know what? I'll be honest. With the capabilities with my ADHD, if I never had a family, I could do it to the same levels as the companies who have like a whole structure. I could do it because I've got the plan. I can do it. And I look back on my social media and I think for the last 2 years, I've done so many projects with so many areas and so many things that companies haven't done yet. They've just stuck with because they struggle. So I'm connected from the ground up right to the funding. There's no room for me, nowhere to go. I'm everywhere.
That's it, don't find things. That's the bigger you get, that either your administrative tax or stuff that, boring stuff that needs doing.
But at the moment, I do all of that. I enjoy it because that's my, again, ADHD power. But the problem is you burn out and then you sacrifice your family, kids and all of that. And for wealth and for accolades and for whatever, I'm not willing to sacrifice all of that. Do you get what I mean? Because when the agenda changes and they fixed everything with the youth, well, not fixed it, but everything's kind of gone back to, you know, the new generation of kids have come in and stuff. The next agenda's going to be there. And where does it leave people like myself? What then? Do you get what I mean? So I have to keep thinking, okay, how am I going to transition when the agenda changes or the problem is different? But I think I'll always, hand on heart, have my foot in space with like autism and ADHD because I live with that and I struggle with it, so I'm always going to be helping if it's not young people. Yeah,
it's a class, man.
No, thank you.
Thanks for coming on.
I'm trying. Thank you for having me.